Welcome to the Twid Show. I'm Chris Wink, your host and the CEO of Technically, a news site about local economies in change. Each week, the Twid Show, it dives into topics on building better companies with leaders who are doing just that. We're an extension of Technically's This Week in Jobs newsletter, which you can join at Technically Subscribe. Today, everyone has gone remote. We're in the midst of a pandemic. So we're going to talk about how to do that with culture in mind. If you have been a company that has always been in office or you've been largely remote, either way, I'm sure something has changed. We're going to give advice, tips, and talk through strategies with two friends. We have Beth Perkins, the Director of People and Culture at O3 World. They are a 40-person digital product agency located in Philadelphia's Fishtown neighborhood when they are not entirely remote. She's been in the people ops game for a decade, but I've learned she has a background in theater. So we'll perhaps do some Shakespeare at the end. Natalie Batiste, she's the people and culture manager at Extra Chef. They're a 30-person operations management platform serving the hospitality and restaurant industry. She spent her career in people ops. Back in the innocent days of February 2020, when all was rainbows and sunshine, she began with this company with two headquarters and thought, like, what an easy gig this will be. Nothing's going to change. It all did. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about, being thrust into it. Beth and Natalie, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Let's start with the easy stuff. Just define for terms here. What's company culture? What are we really talking about?
Man, I mean, I would say your culture at its, like, the simplest way to define it is company culture is the people that you let walk through that door every day. And it's, you know, the accepted behaviors, the traditions, just sort of how people are expected to and allowed to and encouraged to behave with each other within that space, whether it's a physical space or a virtual space.
Well, yeah, I totally agree with that. The one thing that I tend to put it into words like this is like how you treat people, whether it's the company treating its employees or its customers or the employees, how they treat each other. You know, there are a lot of ways you can break that down, like Beth just mentioned, but that's kind of how I like to think about it. I love that.
I want us to get into some lessons that would be true always, but I feel like we have to, sitting in July 2020, acknowledge that. So we've had a pandemic, economic recession. We are in one of the most important movements on racial equity in our country's history. Those are pretty big topics. So could we talk locally for a minute? How have your company values been tested in this moment? How have you seen them displayed? And then we can walk backward a bit about how you got there and what others might think about building that culture. Like, what, how has your culture stood up to the weather?
I mean, from Extra Chef's perspective, like you mentioned, not just the way that we operate with each other as coworkers, but the way that we interact with customers has kind of been flipped on its head with everything that's going on right now in the world. I think our product team and the overall company strategy has done a really great job of shifting what our priorities look like to better serve our customers. But obviously, from my perspective, it's been kind of my role internally to shift the way the company operates to help support our employees. So I'm in HR person of one and trying to figure out, you know, what the company values are as I'm onboarding and how they apply to the situation has been quite a challenge. But thankfully the team's been super great in helping me kind of get to know everybody and get to know how things operate. But in these times, it's been for me a lot of kind of relying on each other to hear what people have to say, to listen to what's important to them and make moves to kind of help support them the best I can.
Natalie, you perhaps have the blessing of being here such a short time. Is there something that, you know, good, bad, or other, you just saw as different that probably speaks to some element of Extra Chef's culture that you've seen on display that kind of is evidence of there being distinct culture? Like, if something played out differently for you that you thought, oh, that's not exactly how it would have happened at a past firm I was at.
Yeah. So we are what we've recently decided to, you know, coin co-headquartered in Philadelphia and New York were evenly split between those two office locations. Right now there's a lot of people kind of across the country in different spots, whether they're with family or left the city. But when I first started, kind of what I noticed was that it was like a very natural kind of difference in, you know, which departments were located in Philly and which departments were located in New York. And there was a very different culture in each of the offices. And that was something that I had talked with Andy, our CEO, about, kind of working towards maybe bringing them closer together as one company with one kind of like consistent culture. And going completely remote has really sped up that process, but I think in a really good way. It's put everybody on more of an even playing field when it comes to who they interact with and who they get to meet on a day-to-day basis. You know, they're not just exposed to the people that they would normally be every day. We have we recently went to every other week, but an all company meeting where, you know, everybody has a chance to talk about what's on their mind, and I think has been really, really awesome in helping to kind of speed up that process for us.
Beth, culture, values, how the heck they look in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think that everything that's going on in 2020, it really does put your values to the test, and you can quickly see which values are really truly a part of your culture and which values are words on a wall.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of companies with just like words on a wall values. But when you're put to the test in all of the ways that companies have been put to the test this year, you really get to see sort of what is true about your culture. And I think one of the things that stands out to me about the O3 culture that's really remained true and almost become stronger is our value of we are a team. Because going fully remote, I mean, we're a company that had a very strong sort of in-office culture. We did not have practice or playbook for how to go fully remote. And we also have a lot of parents on our team, parents of very young children who are trying to balance, you know, homeschooling and daycare with a full-time job, and just like barely keeping their head above water. So we immediately had to just like not only lean into remote work, but we had to lean into like really asynchronous work, which we're used to being together from 9 to 5 and then going home and not working. And right. Now there's, you know, situations where, you know, somebody might be logged on from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. and then they have to log off for homeschool and they're back at 3. And so we've really had to kind of hone our communications processes, and watching the team step up to that we are a team value and pick up the slack for each other and kind of help each other out and say, oh yeah, no, I got you. And, you know, all hands on deck, working late to, you know, get products launched. It's just been really cool to see how strongly that value has held with our team.
Via the invisible hand of savvy programming, you guys represent somewhat different perspectives. Beth, as you're alluding to, full in-office culture. Natalie, co-headquarters naturally creates different cultures. I think even in our sense, on the technically side of things, we have a Philadelphia office, but we have reporters in all of our markets. So I feel like we have a range here of perspectives of just how remote a company was in January, and how remote we are now. I guess for those who are watching this with very different perspectives on where their company was in, you know, the before times, are there distinctions about how managing company culture changes if you first were an office company or if
yes. Yeah. Yes. I think one of the hardest things for us is finding ways, and replicate's not even the right word because you can't really replicate it, but finding ways to sort of replicate those in-office interactions that happen outside of meetings, between meetings, as you pass someone in the kitchen. Like so much of like the social nature of our team was built around those sort of hallway interactions, and everything remote is so structured and scheduled. And so it's, you know, it's hard to schedule a like, oh, let's like talk about how we like each other's shoes in 5 minutes. Like it just doesn't happen remotely, but it happens all the time in office. And I think the first couple months of being remote, that was something that everybody on our team struggled with. And I remember having a conversation with an HR friend of mine at another company. And we were talking about how we like never really felt strong imposter syndrome until now. And we were trying to figure out like, why do I feel like everyone hates me? Why do I feel like I'm failing all the time? One of the reasons we were able to hone in on is like, oh, we're not getting those social cues of like belonging by passing someone in the hallway and having them say like, oh, those are cool earrings, right? Like you don't get that. And our brains really kind of are programmed to need that, that like social validation that you belong here and people value you in a way that it's hard to do in a very structured sort of Zoom meeting day. So I think the first step for me was like identifying how important those little interactions that you take for granted really are and have been to our culture, and then starting to be more intentional about, okay, how we can't pass each other in the hallway anymore, but what are maybe some things that we could do that might start to bring some of that back?
Mm. Yeah, I totally feel you on that imposter syndrome thing. This is kind of the first time I've like delved into what that means. I was like, let me Google imposter syndrome, because like, is that what I have? especially
that's like WebMD for HR.
I think it's WebMD. It's a bunion, or it's imposter syndrome. It's giving me this feeling.
And I hope it's something I can figure out without going to the hospital.
Right.
But yeah, so being new and also trying to develop relationships with the managers that like is all of my job, and not all of my job, but a big, big part of my job and the foundation of what an HR and people culture person does has been, it was a shock at first. Like normally being able to just kind of say, hey, like, what do you think about this? Or listen to conversations our teams were having in the office, where now it's like, I have to schedule a one-on-one with every manager to just, and like, remind myself, it doesn't have to be all about work, like just get to know them. And that's been a big thing kind of for me too, was like, how do I replace those kind of random or just like very unintentional ways of getting to know people with ways that I'm, you know, intending to do it, but aren't feeling forced and fake.
So that's the more individual case where you guys are. I wonder if we could widen and give some advice. So we're talking about building company culture virtually. And I imagine in broad brushstrokes, that could mean a couple of things. You could be maintaining company culture. One thing that I've thought a lot about is I've actually felt very blessed that we did have a lot of in-office time or together time, because I think now we are, as a company, we're able to live off that culture we had built. We already have some traditions and there are some inside jokes and there's like some of that fabric of a community that had a degree of portability because it was there and we can build off it. But as Beth, you alluded to it's like you still have to reinvent. That probably only gets you so far. You need to decide how to keep investing rather than just feasting off what came before. So I think it's one category of how do we maintain or build on what we already have? Or I suppose there's a logic of if we're trying to start something new, or we just think this is an entirely new world and we want to begin from zero. I wonder if there are just, if either of you were starting new jobs today, at some different company, and you had to be charged with building, maintaining, or growing culture, are there some early steps you would take that you'd want to make sure folks thought about?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most important things when you're thinking about building culture is it has to be aligned with the people in leadership, specifically, you know, the people who run the company. So, you know, if HR has one idea of what they think the culture should be, but the CEO's idea is different, you have to find a way to align to the CEO's vision for the company, right? And so I think if I was starting with a new company right now, the first thing I would do, and honestly, the first thing I did when I started with O3 2.5 years ago, I spent my entire first day in a room with the CEO, and we just talked about the org chart and kind of the history of the company and how things have evolved to where they are now, his vision for where he'd like to see them go. And then I spent my first month doing one-on-one interviews with every single employee to just find out, like, hey, I'm new. How would you describe the culture? What's working well? What isn't working well? What would you like to see in the future? And all of that sort of served to create my to-do list for my first year or so of, you know, the things that were going really well that we wanted to amplify, and the things that either maybe we weren't doing enough of or we were doing too much of that we wanted to change course on.
Natalie, yeah, what would you do?
Yeah, I mean, I have been in that position, right? Like when I had 3 weeks in the office with everyone and then we were dealing with how to communicate about a global pandemic with people that had no idea how I communicate. So it's been a lot of trial and error. It's been a lot of, hey, what about this thing to try and get everybody together that like no one responds to? And I'm like trying not to take it personally. Yeah. But yeah, for me, like Beth mentioned, a lot of the one-on-ones that I've been having have been helping to kind of inform what my kind of approach to this has been. And to be honest, I came in thinking like, oh great, these are the big projects I'm gonna work on. I'm gonna get to implement a new HRIS. I'm gonna get to do a whole performance review process. I'm gonna have a bonus plan. And then COVID hit and it was like, well, I have to get to know everybody really fast. Being flexible for me and, you know, not being hard on myself for that has been huge. And saying like, day of prioritizing. Okay, what's going on today? What do I need to handle? What's the most important thing and what can get pushed back another couple of weeks?
Something I'm thinking a lot about is, or maybe a life philosophy of mine is usually inside whatever challenge you're confronting is the opportunity to solve it. And Beth, you alluded to, we lose all of these inefficiencies in in-person communication. You know, when someone's 3 minutes late for a Zoom call, we're annoyed beyond belief. But if someone, you know, you wouldn't think twice about someone walking into your conference room 3 minutes late, or probably wouldn't, or it wouldn't be as big a deal. And then there's just definitely, these are all machines. Virtually, we're dealing with machines. So we have this expectation that they must be inherently efficient. It must operate at full capacity at all times. And it's tricky because they're just machines talking to other people, and people are not anywhere near as efficient as machines are. So I've been trying to think a lot about, in a virtual culture environment, you need to just lean in on what the strengths are of the platform, you know, efficiency. And Beth, you've alluded to it. I wonder if there are ways that you've efficiently created inefficiency, you know, basically how have you built in the ways where people can interact using the tools we have?
I mean, I think one really simple thing that I've started doing over the last several weeks is joining meetings early.
Mm.
Just join the Zoom 3 minutes early. This, because you get that kind of a similar experience to when you walk into the conference room a few minutes early and you're still waiting for the rest of the group and you're just chit-chatting about your weekend or a book you read or, you know, whatever. And it gives you that opportunity. So I lead our Friday morning. Every Friday morning, we have an all hands team meeting. And I typically lead that. So I always get into the Zoom like a full 10 minutes early. And so people will start to trickle in and then I'm chatting with them. And as new people trickle in, I always try to, one tactic is to let new joiners know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So to just be like, oh, Chris, yeah, we're actually, we're talking about Natalie's glasses. She bought them from this new website I had never heard about. And then we can just keep talking about the glasses, but you're now included in the conversation. You don't feel like you're barging in. You have a way in, or you can just sit there and finish checking emails and wait for the meeting to start. And so that's been just like a really small, simple thing that I've started doing in the last month or so that, while it doesn't have this like crazy big impact on the company, I think it does have an impact. And I think it gives people that opportunity to connect. So little things like that, I think are almost as important, if not more important than trying to think of like the big idea that's going to revolutionize remote work.
Mm.
Yeah, I think similarly, I've been leaning a lot on Slack, or Teams, whatever your, you know, chat of choices.
Of course.
But, even, yesterday, I was one of those people that, like, early on in this pandemic was like, I'm going to get a dog. I'm going to be home all the time. It's going to be great. And then there were no dogs available. Like, every place that I called was like, yeah, we don't have any dogs for adoption. So even yesterday, I know a lot of our teammates have dogs, have gotten dogs during the pandemic. So I just created this office pets channel. I was like, I'm really feeling like I need some pictures of dogs in my life. Can you, I know all of you have pets. Can you share them? We've got like a COVID channel going. Our marketing team, who I kind of look at as like my employer branding support, has been really great in helping me come up with some new ideas for how to just engage people in a way that's not necessarily directly work related, but something that they can easily access and come to when they want to.
Yes, I think the non-work related stuff is like a big key. I was talking to our director of client services the other day about, and just being like, you know, is there anything that you're doing with your team that's been sort of effective in building and maintaining the culture within your team? And he was like, yeah, we've started to, like, when we have team meetings, dedicate some time to talking about non-work stuff so that we're not just like hitting agenda, that we leave some space. Where he said that the other day he gave them a demo on how to make ribs. Because like we have this benefit of being in our homes. Like a couple weeks ago, we did a show and tell happy hour after work. So rather than just having like an awkward Zoom happy hour, there was sort of a purpose. And we all took turns saying like, oh, let me show you my quarantine hobby. Or let me show you these. I'm also an artist. Let me show you my paintings. Or like, here's all my house plants. And just kind of letting people into your life a little bit in a way that you've never been able to do when you're in the office. So I think there are actually advantages to this switch to remote work that you can embrace to help add like additional layers to the culture that you have in the office.
I
think that's been one of the most awesome things for me from changing to being remote is like you really do get more of a picture of the whole person that you're working with by, you know, like seeing what their background looks like, seeing who interrupts them while you're on a Zoom call
together.
Yeah,
we're like literally in each other's homes all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you build culture at all? Or is culture just a set of words that describe a group of people's similarities or shared interests?
I think you can intentionally make decisions and help foster behaviors. Like we had Beth mentioned a little bit earlier, like values being like real values or values that are on a wall. And I think you can define where you want your company to go and help to foster some ideas for like how this plays into how we work together. But I do think a lot of it's dependent on the people and, you know, how willing they are to be open and how willing they are to kind of commit to being part of the culture or values that you've established.
Yeah, I think of culture a lot of times like almost like a garden. So like imagine you have just like Philly's full of them, just like a vacant lot. So you could till the soil and plant seeds and label things in rows and you know what you're growing, water it every day, you get whatever typically you planned for. Or you could just leave the empty lot. But the reality is that even in an unattended empty lot, like stuff is gonna grow there. Mm-hmm. It might be weeds and grow stuff, but it's gonna grow there. And so that culture is the same way where you can be intentional about who you bring into the team because they either support your values or sort of believe in the same shared behaviors and traditions as you do. Or you can have no intention whatsoever and just hire whoever the first person you meet is. And culture is happening, whether you try for it or not. But if you try for it, you have a little more control over what's gonna grow there. Whereas if you're not intentional, you still have, nobody can say like, oh, we don't have a company culture. Like, yeah, you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that stands out to me a lot. And I fear in one of the challenges specifically about virtual environments is it's perhaps even easier for blind spots to develop. We technically have done, have always done for the 10 plus years of our reporting, but certainly again in this moment, done a lot of reporting on our industry that we know tech firms are heavily white male focused, heavily white male in leadership. And I worry about the blind spots that come up. And I wonder if you guys have talked much about like how do company cultures how can we make sure company cultures are inclusive for everyone? They're not built in this view of whiteness that sometimes leadership so often has. And as a white male CEO, this is something that we're talking so much about at our organization and have for years. What are tips that you guys are taking to make sure that culture is defended as intentional and inclusive, particularly in a virtual environment when it's so easy to create blind spots, I think?
At Extra Chef, after all of the social uprising around the death and murder of George Floyd, we had a pretty strong reaction from our team. But that Monday morning, we had a meeting and talked a little bit about it, but got a lot of feedback that day that people wanted to talk more, and what were we going to do about it instead of just talking about it? So we developed our first diversity and inclusion council. They're called IDEA, which stands for inclusion, diversity, equity, and access. And I personally have been working on getting some training from actually a company I found from one of your Twitch things, Cultured Enough. I've been, talking to them, and it's been great. It's obviously something that I think every HR person needs to have on their mind. It was something that I had on my mind, is how am I going to approach this effort of mine at this company? And it came to me before I got to it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and I think to kind of build on that, I think one of the most important things that white male CEOs can do is just be willing to listen and be willing to have your mind changed, or be willing to have, sort of be challenged without being defensive, because it's not about you. It just isn't. And so, but I think that your people are really watching the nuances of how you're responding to all of this. Not responding is still a response. And so if they see you sort of avoiding the topic or defending your actions rather than just getting curious and saying, oh, tell me more about why you feel that way, because it's not about you. And so I think just being willing to be open and be challenged and get really, really curious, I think that your team will see that. And that's in and of itself a really, really important step to take. And of course you want to take additional action. But I think action without sort of a personal accountability and willingness to change is a little hollow.
Yeah. Yeah. We're coming up on time, but this obviously is the paramount issue of, our nation's entire history. But something, Beth, that stood out that I've thought a lot about, it's been a committed focus on our editorial for the entirety of our organizational history, that concept of access, and the sheer racial inequality that's represented in our industry. And it feels like a lot of that takes place in company culture in a way that we don't always realize. And the very old but still very powerful Angela Davis framework of it's not enough to be not racist, but you must be anti-racist, is something that I admit we've reported on, but it only in 2016, 2017 do I think we as an organization began to turn our sights there, and that was led by our team, not by me. And as that's become clear, that for me is what company cultures have to confront with. That I think a lot of company cultures, and I would put it to anyone watching this, that it's, we typically, white leaders will typically stop at, well, we're not overtly racist in our culture. And that you find is where you develop blind spots, where you are less welcoming for teammates who don't look like you, or have different backgrounds. And so you instead have to say, forget the not racist. Of course you're not racist, you asshole. That's we're talking about how you're actually enacting change.
Right, because we were all raised in a racist country and taught a racist history. So to some degree, we all are racist. Whether that is intentional or it's a blind spot. So I think that being anti-racist, it's not a binary thing where you are anti-racist or you are not anti-racist. I think it's a journey, right? So you have to decide to be anti-racist, not even every day, but with every interaction and everything you see, you have to make a choice in that moment to say, I'm going to be anti-racist, or you make the choice not to be. but it's not, yeah, to your point, it's not good enough to just kind of do it once. It's a lifelong journey, and you have to accept that you are going to fuck it up once in a while, but you just have to be able to own it, get curious, and try to do better. And I think that's really what people want to see right now.
I think it can show up in a lot of different ways in values, but a culture that I would want to have everyone think about. One of our long held value words has been challenging, which comes from our being a news organization. And so that of course shows up in lots of ways. It identified, I always joke every monthly all team meeting, I have 7 full-time reporters. So I definitionally do a press conference every month. I have 7 business reporters who watch that. And I take that very, very seriously. I'm doing a press conference every month. And so questions of racial equity has come up for years. Our team would push me on whether we were doing enough. And that value word made us better. The values were far bigger than I ever was. And I think that's something that speaks a lot of how can your company culture, sure, it has to come from leadership, but it has to be less malleable than leadership. Leadership adapts, changes, confronts compromise. Some of your company culture should be somewhat more stable. As we wrap up here, I wonder though, if either of you have a small case study, might be too heady a phrase for this, but if something for you has stood out as, hey, we either built, maintained, leaned into our culture recently that was a success that we think others could take and do something with, anything actionable that you would want to make sure everyone walks away thinking about, knowing how to do, or an idea to point them about building their company culture virtually?
That's not a small question.
this is Twitch, though. There are no small questions.
I mean, I think we've touched on a lot of actionable ideas, but I think the best advice I can give you is you have to double down on the intentionality of what you're doing. This is not a time for autopilot. You really need to be carefully thinking through all of the details, even things that seem super small and inconsequential. And I think looking at everything through the lens of your values, like what I'm about to do, even if it's just setting up a Zoom happy hour, like what values does this support or not? And just making sure that everything you're doing is through the lens of your values, and that's how you're making decisions. I think that'll kind of keep you on the right course culturally.
Mm. Yeah, and I totally agree with that. And then like from a values perspective is like, be open to change. Maybe the values you established 3 years ago are not the same values that you're living today, or the values that you want to live today. They're not, you know, written in stone and unable to be flexible along with you. From a personal perspective, seek help. You can't do everything you're on your own. You don't know everything about diversity and inclusion just because you're in HR. For me, it's been a lot of like, what do I know I can do? And what do I know somebody can do better than me? And how can I get them to help me out here?
That's lovely. I think that's a great way to go. And fortunately, it's a good way to go because we got to go. That has been the Twidge Show. That is a weekly conversation on building better companies brought to you by Technically. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you, Beth. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Thanks.